We know that something like 40% of credits taken by undergraduates in the United States don't actually count towards anything. That is a lot of wasted student loan money that students are spending on credits that don't actually help them advance towards a degree. So the audit platform provides students with kind of a pre-approved set of courses where the institution has said ahead of time, we know that we are going to accept courses X, Y, and Z from institutions A, B, and C, and they are pre-approved into your degree pathway.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones, sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. This is part two of our series with Aaron Crisp. I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hi, Brad.
Hello, glad to be here.
And we have Aaron. Welcome back, Aaron.
It's great to be here.
Now, if you didn't get a chance to catch part one, you can go back and listen to Digital to Learn with Aaron Crisp on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or Google Podcasts. You can also access the episode on our Digital to Learn website, and that's numerical two. But for now, let's go ahead and get started.
Previously on Digital to Learn.
So you're going to be starting with a company that's kind of a startup, Campus EDU. Tell us about what that company does and what your vision is for what they might be doing in the future.
And then the third tool is an audit tool. If you have a whole bunch of schools who are sharing courses together, then students need a method of choosing approved courses. We know that something like 40% of credits taken by undergraduates in the United States don't actually count towards anything. That is a lot of wasted student loan money that students are spending on credits that don't actually help them advance towards a degree. And sometimes that's because they stop out, but sometimes it's because they didn't know that this course that I just finished doesn't actually count towards anything in my degree. I already have all the electives I need. It doesn't count towards my major. Maybe they took a course with another school that they think is going to transfer in and it doesn't. They find out later that this course doesn't transfer in for what I need. So the audit platform provides students with kind of a pre-approved set of courses where the institution has said ahead of time, we know that we are going to accept courses X, Y, and Z from institutions A, B, and C, and they are pre-approved into your degree pathway. So even though we don't offer the Spanish course, we know this school does, we approve it, students can go ahead and enroll for that course without worrying about the fact that it's not going to transfer in.
The wave of the future.
Yeah.
That's all I can think.
Yeah.
What are the primary differences? I could probably take a guess at some between something like Coursera and then the course offerings coming through your company.
Yeah, there are some similarities for sure. And I know David Joyner's been a guest on this podcast before, and his model, you know, that is kind of MOOC-like, but not completely like a MOOC is very instructive to what we're trying to do at Campus EDU. And so there are definitely some similarities in the sense that we can offer one course that has students in it from multiple institutions. That course might be very, very large, but it's going to have a certain number of adjunct faculty or teaching assistants for every, you know, X number of students, 20 or 30 students or something like that, to keep it manageable. But I would say the thing that differentiates it, even though it could be very large, is that there is a synchronous component that is timed. And I really think that's key. We went back and forth with that on the instructional design. Like, should we require these synchronous components where students have to show up at a certain date and time? And it may only be one time in a course. But I really think that because our primary audience is probably this 18 to 22 year old age bracket, for now at least, that they really need that opportunity to see one another. And I think they want it. I think most kids, I happen to live with an 18 year old, or I did, he just went off to college. You know, he would much prefer FaceTime with his friends than to talk on the phone. He almost doesn't, you know, talk to them if it's not FaceTime.
Yeah. So
I think they want that face to face with each other.
Well, you know, I'm a fan of that face-to-face opportunity in all courses. So I love that that's a part of it. And I'm eager to see how this takes off. And then knowing your commitment to data too, what the data is showing about what students think about Campus EDU. We had a guest on the podcast, and that episode should be launching anytime. But they shared that the faculty that they work with have been hearing the word opportunity a lot during COVID. Like, this is an opportunity for you to try something new. This is an opportunity for you to grow. And even though, I mean, some of us, I love that word. I probably overuse that word, I'm sure. I still like it. But in an attempt to better acknowledge how the faculty were feeling, this guest has since changed the language a bit and has said he's talking to faculty as, how has COVID opened new doors for you? The word open has become kind of his word for the COVID era. So with that in mind, how has the pandemic opened doors for you and the work that you're doing?
Yeah, the word that comes to mind for me, I like open a lot. I maybe start, we'll start using that one. accelerant is really what comes to mind for me, in the sense that it can be destructive and dangerous too, right? I think COVID has accelerated things that were already underway, and it has just poured fuel on the flames to make whatever was there bigger and brighter and hotter. So if there was trouble brewing, it has brought that to the surface and made it really a huge problem. And if things were underway that were positive in terms of remote or online or distance teaching and learning, then it has brought that to the surface in a way that says, this is a priority that can no longer be ignored or kind of set to the side on the back burner. It's brought it front and center stage. So I'm an optimist always. Like, I'm always going to see the bright side before I see the negatives. Almost to a fault. I can imagine the negatives. I can talk about them for sure. But the bright side to me of COVID and the pandemic is, or one kind of upside from a teaching and learning perspective, is that we have a whole lot of people who before this felt like anything digital or distance in terms of education and learning just wasn't for them. I mean, I used to ask my Uber drivers every time I was going somewhere, like, tell me about your education. Where'd you go to school and what was that like? And over, I would hear from people, oh, I tried an online class or two and it's just not for me. I just can't do that. It's just not for me. And I can really sympathize for that. I think for a long time, for the last 15, 20 years, there are people for whom the way that we have built online classes is just not going to work well for them because it requires so much self-direction, so much like independent motivation, and it was a little disconnected from anything social. And we know that social aspect of learning is key to a healthy learning environment, but we just hadn't figured it out yet in an online space. And so I think COVID ushers in a new era where now people have been forced, like it or not, to engage in some form of virtual interaction, whether it's for meetings for work or training for their workplace or helping their kids with their homework or helping their kids with their e-learning. Tons of parents now have had to navigate this situation with elementary kids and middle and high school kids even. And I think that is showing everyone both the upsides and the downsides. And I think a result of that could be that we start to pay more attention to where are the times and places where it's most appropriate to use virtual learning and distance learning and online learning, and how do we make the best use of our face-to-face time. So as opposed to face-to-face and being in the same physical space, being the default where we just design for that all the time, and then if we have to, we do online, we start critically thinking about what components of our learning are actually best served in an online virtual space and what components of our learning are really best served from being face-to-face in the same physical location. And if we have the gift of having people in the same physical location, let's take advantage of that and make sure that people are actively learning and doing something together as opposed to doing something they could do on their own at home, like watching the video instead of, you know, listening to someone lecture. So I think all of these are opportunities.
I'm going to do it too.
We can be.
Didn't I?
You did. I think COVID has opened us up to thinking about the design of our teaching and learning in a very intentional way, because now we know our tools well. We had all these tools in the toolbox before, but we didn't know that we had this power drill that was so powerful, right? We were still like screwing everything in with a screwdriver. And now we're like, whoa, I have this tool that I can use. And so now we've started to learn when and where are the best places to pull those tools out.
Great example. And just thinking about some of the podcast guests that we've connected with recently, Brad and I have learned from them that they're busier than they've ever been. So that word accelerated, I think you're right. It's harder and harder to get on their calendar, to get on their schedule. And they're just They were doing all this exciting work last year, but their audience is so much bigger now, and the need for their services today, tomorrow, is happening. So thanks for that.
Yeah.
So what does the future hold? What things excite you about the future of higher ed, and what do you have concerns about?
Let me look in my crystal ball.
And we're going to hold you to all of these. So whatever predictions you make, we're going to hold you accountable.
Right. Well, I do think there are some indicators about things that we'll probably see in the short term and maybe in the longer term, one of which being the pace of change in society. I mean, I hear this all over the place, right? That the pace of change, careers, workplaces, the skills that people need, it's unprecedented. I mean, we have to learn how to be continuous learners in order to continue to thrive as a culture and society. I think that's going to impact higher ed, or it should impact higher ed, if we're serving our learners well. We've got to figure out ways to unbundle and break apart this four-year model of a degree, or even six-year if you're counting 2 years of a master's program, and somehow spread that out longer across people's lifespan so that they have educational opportunity regularly when they need it in order to upskill and reskill and move into positions of leadership or management or whatever the next level is for them in their careers, while not losing the value of that formational experience of being an 18 to 22 year old on a residential college campus. I think there's always going to be a need for that step. Speaking as someone who just launched my 18 year old out of my home, I can't imagine sending him at the maturity level that he is right now. I hope he doesn't listen to this. I don't think he will. I can't imagine sending him from our home protected environment. And we've done the best we can, right? Of like making him make his own choices and start to grow up a little bit. He can do his own laundry. He can feed himself. Those are not the things I'm worried about. So I'm talking about like the formation as a person to make good choices, to learn how to invest in friendships, to learn how to get along with people well, emotional intelligence and maturity. And I would not want to launch him from our home out into the big wide world without some sort of intermediary step where he's living and engaging and interacting with his peers and learning from that experience to grow and mature and change. So I think that's still a value. Now, does it need to be 4 years long? I don't know. Does it have to be 24/7, you know, fall semester, spring semester, off for the summer? Probably not. I think there are a lot of other ways we could be thinking about that residential experience that could provide the same kind of value and even could be blended in the sense that residential campus students could be learning via technology while also benefiting from student development and all the things that happen when you're, you know, a student living with other students. So I think that probably will change over the coming decades. I think the currency of education being the credit hour and the bachelor's degree and the master's degree and the transcript, I think that currency, so if you think of currency in the term of like money and buying and trading, you're getting a degree and then you like trade it in for a job, really. So it's like a currency that you barter. That whole barter system needs a complete redo for the 21st century. We need to be bartering. Our currency needs to be credentials. It needs to be something that's much smaller than a bachelor's degree. I mean, think about the scope of learning that a bachelor's degree is meant to encompass. No wonder employers have been telling us for decades, you know, colleges, you send us these people with bachelor's degrees, but I never know what I'm getting. Well, it's because there's a whole lot that you could or could not be getting out of 120 credit hours. So what if we found ways to value student learning in much smaller bite-sized pieces of currency? And then students would be able to show employers, potential employers, here's exactly what I know I can do. These are my strengths and my giftings. These are areas where I still want to grow. And employers would or could have avenues to fill those gaps where they can see, yep, you know, you've got these things, I'm going to hire you, that's what's most important to me. But here are other places in the marketplace where we're going to send you while you work for me in order to get these other pieces of training and skill development that you're going to need in order to be successful. So I just think we need a whole new currency to trade in when it comes to valuing teaching and learning and what people know and can do.
It's a great example. Yeah.
I'm wondering, with change occurring at a faster pace, how difficult that's going to be for faculty to accept, which could mean they have to do things differently. They have to think about higher education differently. It's not like when I went to school, you hear that all the time.
Right. Yeah. I do think about what is the role of faculty in the future of higher ed. I think it's going to be pretty different from traditional faculty today when you think of like the professor who studies his content area or her content area. They're an expert in the field. They're conducting research. And then they kind of teach on the side as a secondary thing. I mean, that's kind of an old school paradigm for faculty. But there are some of them who still really fall in that camp and are like, yeah, that's me. And part of me wonders whether that model is at all viable for long term. I just don't see how it fits with the future of what people are going to want and need from learning. I think we'll have faculty who are subject matter experts in conducting research and have definite value in that sphere. And we'll have faculty who are very connected to student learning and who really care about the learning of their students and want to see them grow and nurture them. I'm not sure that expecting the same person to fulfill both roles at 100% is a reasonable expectation.
So as we think about the possibility that people always talk about of smaller colleges beginning to go away because they're not financially viable, I also wonder if there aren't going to be some new startups that embrace all of the things you've just described and immediately are more relevant than a lot of the colleges and universities we currently have.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in some of the colleges and universities that we've started to work with at Campus EDU, the speed at which those schools are willing to transition and change to a totally new paradigm for some of them is kind of directly in proportion to their felt need, to their sense of urgency. So, I mean, if you've seen declining enrollments and you're reading the tea leaves and you're hearing from your faculty and students that it's just not going well, your enrollment personnel, you're going to be a lot more interested and engaged in diving into that unknown future.
That's true. That is very true. Well, Aaron, we're going to have you back again to see if your prophecies come true. I agree with them, so I think they all will come true. That usually is the turning point. So thanks for being with us today. We appreciate your insights as always and your friendship and the privilege we've had to work with you over these many years. So best wishes to you in this new venture.
Thank you, Brad and Tiffany. It was great to be here today.
Thank you. And for all of our listeners, we are going to link to Erin's resources. We've got her Twitter handle, her LinkedIn handle, articles she's written, research she's done that we will provide to you on our website, Digital to Learn with a numerical 2. Please follow us on Twitter. Catch us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and on Podbean. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.